Baie welkom by die eerste episode van 2019 van Tunes Live. Ek is Jean Marais. Tunes Live is 'n reeks gesprekke wat ek voer met plaaslike musici en plaaslike musiekindustrie rolspelers. Tunes Studio is 'n rehearsal en recording studio in Stellenbosch wat musiekondersteuningsdienste bied soos rehearsal space, recordings, live sound, die retail van musiekprodukte en bykomstighede en sowel as musieklesse wat by Notes Music School by die Paul Bosner tak in Stellenbosch aangebied word. Nou is ons by die tweede gas op Tunes Live wat vir sy tweede keer ingekom het vir 'n episode of 'n gesprek of wat ek al jy dit wil noem. Dit is Donovan Toews. Hy is die basspeler van die metaalgroep Mind Assault, local metal band Mind Assault, wat al vir meer as 16 jaar aan die gang is. Hy het ook 'n nuwe projek saam met Clayton Albert Arendse, Nikki van den Heuver en Wikus, wie se fan ek nou ongelukkig nie het nie, maar hulle is Like Water en hulle doen hulle launch op die 2de Maart by M. Eimer. Ek weet nie of dit is iets wat gedisclose moet word nie, maar daar is het nou. Nou weet julle, julle kan het gaan uitcheck. So Donovan het vir die tweede keer met ons kom gesels, want daar was net hopeloos te veel stories gewees en gegewe ons geskiedenis waar ons in Fudge saam begin speel het reeds in 1999 strek ons vriendskapsverhouding net oor hopeloos te lank om al die stories vast te pen in een episode. So hy het weer 'n draai kom maak en ons het vooral gefokus op die begin daar van Fudge, wat gebeur het toe twee van Fudge se members insluitend in myself in 'n motorongeluk was, waar Fudge daar vandaan heen gegaan het en toe ook verder skoolstories, pionierskoolstories wat nogals baie fun was en baie funny was ook om te luister. Daar is 'n paar goed wat ek nie eens kan onthou nie wat Donovan vir ons vertel het. En verder het ons ook aandag gefokus op dinge wat daarna gebeur het, soos waar hy gaan studeer het, 'n bietjie meer gefokus op Donovan in sy persoonlike lewe en dan weer geraak aan musiekstories. Maar ek kan nie te veel verder sê nie, behalwe dat jy die gedruis van 'n motorvoertuig hoor. Ek is saam met Mark Ellis op pad IJzerfontein toe. Ons gaan skryf aan die tweede Jake Gunn album. Die Jake Gunn band gaan bietjie vir 'n wegbreek en 'n paar songs aan mekaar timmer. So wees gereed dat daar gaan nuwe musiek uitkom. Weet nie wanneer nie, maar daar is dinge in die pipeline om na uit te sien. So ja, with no further ado, kom ons luister na die tweede episode van Donovan Toews.
So what do you remember about the old Braille campus, the Pioneer School? Did you have can you remember any hangouts where you guys chilled in break time?
No, not really break. We had there was a wooden structure by the pond that me and Rian called our house after school.
Oh yes,
we used to go drink cheap whiskey and soda water there.
Our house. It was the Klimrom.
Yeah, it was a house structure. But yeah, it was just outside the Brayton.
Yes, it's the thing I'm thinking about. It's close to the Klimrom.
Yeah.
Okay, and then so why did you guys go? Did you go to Rookscallum then?
No, we did the drink there. Ah. When I was at Arlu.
Yes.
School. Yeah. But that was kind of where we'd hang out actually.
What did you study at Arlu?
Good question. No, I studied I did a few subjects there. I did telephony, I did basic computers.
But it was more than a job.
Yeah. And then I did extra classes at Borland College.
Okay.
So I did business communications, entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And one other. But yeah, I can't really remember what I actually... I did the telephony stuff, which I never used.
Mm-hmm.
It was a disaster, that. And then whatever was computers and something that Mrs. Du Bois taught...
I don't remember
what it was actually.
Something that misses the
word. I've got a certificate somewhere, dude. I can whip it out if you really need it for this interview.
But okay.
I played music with you, that's what I did.
But yeah, So, but you weren't at the Braille campus for very long.
No, I was, but I didn't... No, because then it moved into high school.
That's not what I'm thinking. Because what happened, just for the sake of the people that weren't in the Pioneer School, was that, if I remember correctly, in 1997... it was still Braille campus, and then the partially sighted campus, and then that merged into the Braille campus, becoming the primary school, and then the other campus was a high school.
Yeah, but what happened is, so doctors thought I would go totally blind, so I had to learn Braille and attend school at the Braille campus, but I didn't want to stay there. So I would live at the partially sighted campus, and I took Standard 6, which was 96, to actually learn Braille part-time with Mrs. Stale. So I didn't want to skip a year of school to learn Braille. So I learned it at her house like 3 times a week or whatever, and then I attended school at the Braille campus, but I was never in any of the hostels or whatever.
And that's so obviously where your relationship with her also started.
Yeah, yeah.
You became really good mates with her.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And then, so you stayed to boarding school, well, in the hostel, but you went to the other campus. Was that the vibe for a year?
Yeah, I wasn't really keen to stay in the hostel there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did my schooling...
Which standard was this now? Sorry.
7.
Standard 7, yeah. Okay.
And then standard 8, I think it all merged into high school.
Learning that was disabled. 1998, yes.
Yeah. So it was learning disabled kids, visually impaired kids, and blind kids.
So, okay, cool. So that's 1998. But now, a big theme for me, which I actually skipped in your first episode, which I usually ask my suspects, is... What can you remember when we met? I briefly touched on it in the intro. What I remember of that is I was in standard 2, now it's grade 4. That same 1997, that year. And I remember me asking you, hey dude, luister jy Faith No More, the album of the year. You're like, who's this little snotkop telling me about Faith No More and shit? But then you already knew then that I was Francois' brother, or I think so. I don't know. What can you remember of that? You tell me.
Yes, dude, I'm proud of you if you got into Faith No More. That, yeah, I do remember that. But I remember you were super into cricket.
Yeah.
And you used to play cricket with the ball in the bag.
I was busy playing cricket when we had that conversation. Well, that's all I did in primary school.
Okay.
Yeah, that and lying on my bed listening to Smashing Pumpkins, Megadeth, Pantera, or whatever.
Yeah, and I remember that. Shit, okay.
That was at the Braille campus.
I think...
So like, kind of, what was your thoughts on this fucking snotkop standard 2 lighty? You are now standard 7, like 5 years older than me. Yes, this little blind kid tuning you about Faith No More. I mean, you at that point had a way more advanced music, like just music taste in general, than I had.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed. I do remember. And I remember you were always, and then we spoke about Barney Simon. And
yes.
The Night Zoo, 5FM.
Yes. And I wouldn't be surprised if you got me into that.
Maybe. I remember you liked Machine Head, or I don't know if I played a role in that, but I think you used to dig your old school...
You played a big role in shaping my musical taste, because I still remember it so well. You would bring your little sucky with like 10 or 12 CDs in. brought a couple of CDs worth for the weekend. And then I remember that smell of that bag and that CDs. I remember that smell so well.
I also remember that thing. It had a distinct smell.
Yeah. And I was in the... Like, as we say in Afrikaans, in die wolke, like, I was super amped whenever Donovan would come over for a weekend, because when you guys went out and, like, saping missions and causing cuck missions, and our little kids stay at home, and I can listen to the CDs, I can check what did Donovan bring this weekend, and yes, it was fun, man. It was like Christmas for me, like listening to all that stuff. And I was like, okay, cool, this is my favorite. And then afterwards, I'd like ask you, okay, what's this band and what's this song when you come back? I'd ask you a lot of questions about whatever albums. But yeah, no, my main point is, like, you had a big role, you and my brother, Francois had a big role in shaping my musical taste, and also then my uncle Sebastian, and obviously my mom Edelweiss. She obviously had a big played a big part in that as well. But yeah, what do you have any commentary on that? You remember meeting me?
I just remember. Well, I don't know if I remember the first encounter, but I remember chatting to you at breaks about music.
Yeah,
you were quite shy.
Yeah,
initially, but super energetic. And I was always impressed that you knew. I forget something that you were also keen on, whether it was Faith No More, but there was something else. It was, at that stage, it was another band that you really dig.
I just got into Springbok Neat Girls. I got into Metallica through my brother. I got into Megadeth in 98 when I standard 3. I still remember my uncle Sebastian. He came on his bike to visit, and he brought this Euthanasia album from Megadeth. I got into that. I'm like, fuck, this is the shit. This is like, yo, I listen to that a lot. Euthanasia.
And I remember your CDs were always super organized in alphabetical order, braille marking on the top.
Yeah. but now, speaking of Pioneer School stories, I want to touch on some, you Oaks had crazy cockmark stories with, some of the Oaks back in the day, Trevor Macken and Johan Pietersen.
Dude, I'm going to hell for that. I was telling someone, we're doing a 20-year reunion. I don't know if you're on the group.
Yeah, no, obviously not. I missed it with a year or two, I think. Or so, I don't know, whatever. It's like a 5-year gap or whatever.
Yeah, so it's all happening next year in September. So it's like a 20-year thing or whatever. And I was telling someone about this guy, Harold Trollop, who was my mate, and we've recently got in touch again. And this guy, I would always have to buy him smokes, and he would smoke it during break. And one of the prefects was also totally blind.
But he was, I just have to say for the record, that Gerard Trollop was a fearless blind guy. He wasn't your typical blind guy. He had no fear. He would do what the fuck ever he wants. He was like, yes, Gerard Trollop was a, he's, yo, no, legend.
This dude, and I was having a bum day. I was pretty bleak because at that stage, I wasn't sure whether my eye condition would stabilize or, would deteriorate. So anyway, he decides that we're standing in the queue, and this prefect that he didn't like, he would always want to fuck with this guy, and he took his lighter out, and the kid in front of him was this Trevor Macken, and he just lit his hair, dude, and you just smelled this singed hair smell.
Oh,
and he always had this thing, he didn't want blind people to be pathetic. You know, and Trevor had this issue where he would stick his hand in his eye to stimulate it, so it gave him the sort of perception of seeing, because
shit, I didn't know that.
And Gerard would always be like, what? Fuck! What are photos? What? What? And then he would show him the sun, and he's like, kijk daar! What is it? And he's like, it's near the sun. And Gerard's like,
yeah.
Is it the spaceship, Trevor? Yeah, that's the fucking sun. No, Gerard was, he was a good lucker.
Yes.
When Joey was, yo.
And Spiker, Francois van Heerlen, what happened? Yes, there? One day your Oaks tied him to a chair in the hallway.
No, when we moved campuses, we had these things that you used to have to try, the food company, which I forget what they were called, but
I remember
Feed'em. So we had their food trolleys.
Yes, the food wasn't great, eh?
Well, I'll tell you about the strike now. So we stuck Trollop and myself, put Spaker on a chair, and we tied him to the chair. That's how it started. And then we decided to stick him on the trolley, and Gerard, who's totally blind, took his shirt off. Well, took Spaker, the other kid's shirt off.
Yeah.
Now he's tied up, and he decided to write, which he couldn't really write with a permanent marker, if lost, return to classroom 607. And we gagged him, and then Gerard, so he took him for a trolley ride, tied up on a chair, on the trolley, dude, around the campus, into the walls.
Yes.
This poor kid. And then talking about Feed'em, one evening we got a boiled egg, a couple of pieces of tomato, and something for dinner. And we decided, it wasn't enough, and we decided, screw that. We're all training hard, athletics, whatever, and this isn't enough. Yeah. So we decided that we were malnourished, so we striked, and we got everyone involved for the strike, and we got the girls' hostel, everyone. So we didn't go to school the next day. We met on the rugby field. And the teachers, they didn't pay any attention. So my mate, he's like, oh, fuck, there goes the dartboard. Anyway, he decided that we're not getting the results we want. So he phoned the local paper, dude, the Worcester Standard. So they came and they did a story on the kids from the 5 years ago.
Serious?
Yes, dude, we were in shit, eh?
What?
Yeah, I think we got lasagna the next night.
Hectic. But did you actually have like strikes? Did you go on like hunger strikes and vibes like that?
No, we just didn't go to school. And we stayed on the rugby field.
Yes.
Because we said the food was cack.
Mm.
We were being ignored, so then we phoned the local newspaper.
Yes, Mole, I never heard of that.
Didn't you?
Uh-uh.
No, it was a massive thing.
It's almost like the Barry Boom story. That's also a different one. You obviously know that story, where he said there was a bomb threat at the school, but there was nothing like it.
I heard about that.
Remember that story?
Yeah, yeah.
He must played for a band called Plethora.
Yeah, he was erratic. I wonder where he is, actually.
He's still around. Jaco Goosen, regional manager from Bothner, he's still got contact with old Barry. He's still in Paul. I think he's actually still working for the police, at the operating system.
Yes, dude, I remember the one night, I don't know, everyone had still to take. Did I tell you about this? So you had like a silent time between 10 and 10:15 where you had to read your Bible or you had to be quiet.
Yeah.
And the hostel committee, they always wanted to like beat a kid for not being quiet or reading during this time. And they would always have a weapon, you know, so it would be like a soap in a sock or it would be a little like a beach bat or something. And one of the learning disabled kids had a fan belt, and he wanted to hit someone with this fan belt.
What's this, a vammer?
I know.
Who was it? It doesn't matter.
In case they listen to this.
Yeah.
And then another one of the kids said, okay, dude, I'll let you hit me, but then I want to burn you on the ass with an iron, like a straygazer.
Oh, word.
Yeah, so now there's like 32 kids, like in the laundromat, in the laundry, in the boarding school. One oak hits the other guy with a fan belt. You just check across his ass, dude. Like, cut lines.
Woo.
Now it's his turn. He has to bend and they heat up this iron. And he had like this nice triangular burn. Yes. Literally, yeah, you could smell like burning flesh, dude. It was surf.
Wow.
But so we used to cause cuck with the learning disabled kids. That's a part of the fact.
That's just justified. Man, they caused like I spoke about it on my episode with Willem Welsen. How, like, I can't, you cut that shit out of your mind, but yeah, like the learning disabled kids were really, really rude to the blind kids. And I just decided, screw you guys, I'm not gonna let you guys make fun of me, I'm just gonna like just be stronger and just, yeah, wherever I had the chance, I would make fun of them, you know.
Yeah, I suppose that's what kids do. Yeah.
That's what they do, yeah.
But looking back now, I thought, geez, some of the stuff that we did.
Rough, man, rough. If you think about it now, like much, much wiser and just another take on it. It's like really, really rough. Now I'm also thinking back to the bigger campus, to where the partially sighted and the learning disabled kids was. Fudge's first gig was actually in a hospital. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, dude. We were part of...
we were actually still called Apathy then.
Oh, were we?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry. Anyway?
Yeah, we played it... I think it was some... They were taking the blind kids to a... What was it? It was like a... to less fortunate kids in a hospital. Oh, even Donjers.
That the vibe? Okay.
And we decided to go and play in the children's ward. Mm. Me, you, and your brother. Awesome.
I had a floor tom. My old Duke by Dixon kit. I just had my floor tom. That's the only thing I had.
Yes, I just remember setting up and we gave balloons out. Yeah, it was super cool. Do you also remember we played that gig outside the bottle store, dude?
Oh, my word. Yes,
and your brother was pissed off.
Oh, my word. And we like did Sari Mare and stuff like that because the people didn't like our vibe. Crazy. And then we were just doing random shit. Was it the Golden Stamps promotions?
Yeah. What the? We got paid though.
Yeah, that's crazy. I totally forgot about that.
Yes, I wasn't popular.
Oh,
we had like
word.
400 or 500 people, and we played on these crazy. Oh, actually, it wasn't a bad stage. Cool PA.
Yeah.
But yes, the crowd was not happy with what we had to offer.
No, that was...
And they were writing.
That was one of the many gigs back in the day where the crowd and the band just didn't match up at all. But anyway, yeah, back to Pioneer School, our first show. Okay, what can you remember of that first show in the hall with DJ Scat Cat Arne, who he still used to, he's now Boomrock Arne on Facebook. He's got a studio there in Worcester. He's, yeah, is a mover and a shaker. Yes, I take my hat off to that guy. He's an audio engineer and he's blind. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, he loved his music. He always had like such a cool PA.
Yeah,
I remember we played in like a socky.
That was at
RPA in the corner.
That was at the end of 1999. Yeah, it was at the beginning of Fudge. It was our first gig, we're like full band gig. Can you remember anything of that night? Because I know that I got pissed for the first time that night. I was 12 years old actually at the time.
No, I had nothing to do with that. I remember at one of those school things, I remember being in a mosh pit and I bit through my tongue.
Oh shit.
And I've still got the scar, like I can feel in the middle of my tongue, I can feel this lump of like scarred tissue. And shit. I remember going to that Sister Funda Mavis office, and she gave me injections and she gave me this anesthetic rub, and I couldn't, like, yeah, anyway, it was horrible. But that gig, dude. I don't remember, I think your brother actually got pissed that night.
No, he probably did. Artist
Peach Schnapps.
Yeah. No, we still went to the parkie because we went back to Van Groenstraat, where Van Groenstraat 5, you know that place. I mean, fuck, you've spent so many hours, so many.
No, that was my second home. I was in the hostel half the week and then with your mom.
Staying in the spare room. Anyway, so, but we had a second gig. My brother was telling me today that we had a second gig also at the school, but that was more towards the end of 2000, your matric year. By that time, I remember we still had already had Self Defy, which was on the Blind Perception Fudge album, which was the one after Keeping It Real. And so I definitely remember we played Self Defy, and that show got stopped. We got asked to stop. Remember that show?
Dude, someone had an epileptic fit or something, and they thought...
Serious?
Like, yeah. I think we had to stop because we had strobe lights and we had some smoke machines.
Oh, my
fuck. And someone had issues with epilepsy.
Because my brother just told me today that, it was too loud.
No. And then the next week, the Dominee was there to pray for us because we were bringing Satan to the school.
Oh, my God. There was big cuck.
I remember that.
And then there's still the story of, we might have spoken about this in the last one, where my brother sang Killing in the Name of in front of the Dominee of Worcester at the Worcester Sco.
Yes.
He was in big cock about that, though. Jeez.
I remember that.
How's that? At the Worcester Sco daytime, fuck you, I won't do what you told me. And the Dominee is standing there watching this shit. That's amazing.
I remember we were,
Yes.
I remember those times there where we couldn't do much. Shit.
Anyway.
That was, and then the Oak came to pray. There was an article about that, dude.
Serious? In the Worcester Standard.
I remember it now that you remember.
So we got bad publicity. How's that, bro?
That's our show, and someone had an epileptic or fit or something because of a strobe light. But we were like magicians. We could talk to the other side, apparently, but we couldn't really. We can't play any Queen songs backwards. Not even forwards. Well, I can do another one, Bites the Dust for you.
Boom, boom, boom. That's pretty easy. Now, also thinking that days with like all the bands from that time, Human Error, Blend, former Superheroes. You must have been pretty involved with the Stargazer cinema scene. Remember that little room. Remember it went outside.
Yes.
When it got big, when we got Fokoff and Hogs and stuff, and the Sharma Aftertaste.
Yeah, then we played outside.
Aftertaste actually still played inside. I remember that clearly.
Yeah.
But you remember that inside room? It was a perfect size room to have like a rock show. in that days of, dude, like, you could fit, like, you must help me here, like 100 people?
Yeah, maybe 150, but I remember playing a gig there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so my cousin was here from Joburg, and we played, Fudge played the gymnasium matric after party.
Yes, okay? Yes.
So me and my cousin drove through in, I don't know what it was, like a Toyota Corolla or whatever. It was my grandfather's car, and he had just passed away, or Taz, or I don't know, laser, that was it. Anyway, my 51, like my PV TNT fitted, we had to put the seats down to get the amp in the back. And I still remember we bought a bottle of brandy and we bought some beers, and we were selling the brandy outside the gig. But as we pulled up, there were these oaks there, and my cousin thought, fuck, we're going to get robbed. And I parked, I said, don't worry. Got out the car, and they all greeted me, and that was the Ram Clan.
Michael.
Michael,
yes,
and the guy.
Yes.
And then we played our gig, and after the gig, I couldn't find my cousin. Like, he was gone. And we had made plans to stay in the hostel.
Oh, and he had to walk from some... Yeah, anyway, no, sorry, I'm interrupting.
He went on a joyride with some kids in a Jag, and he thought I was in the car, but I wasn't.
Oh, my and he word, got to the
petrol station on the N1, and he decided to drive then, this Oaks car. And he was doing donuts or whatever he was doing. And they took the keys from him and they drove. And then he was still driving. But he stopped for a leak on the N1.
And then they left him there.
Yes. So the next morning we found him sitting in the reception area.
Is this not Brad?
That's Brad, yeah.
Yes.
Dude, yeah, I remember that. And the cops still came to us and they said, Dry om. So Brad turns around in a circle, but it means something. They meant dry the beers om that we were drinking. Dry om, yeah. But that was a chore, then.
Oh, my word. Is that where dry om? Now I've got the dry om story.
Yes. Yeah, Brad's turning around in circles. Meantime, the cops are saying, turn your drink out.
Yo, but that Stargazer Cinema, yo, dude, that was like a whole scene, a whole vibe, movement. I remember, like, Logan and the Oaks and Rian.
Logan, I bumped into one of the guys from Skullabrock. So yes. Logan played with Antipathy. And then Carl from Day Turns Night.
Yes.
He lives in Worcester now.
Oh, yeah.
And I was talking to him about those days. Mm. And it's nothing like that. There's no Maguire's, no. Balker. We had a movie.
There is a Balker.
Yeah, but it's going, like, but there's karaoke no bar.
Live music, man. It's like weird. Yes, I'm getting nostalgic. I'm gonna stop it. It's like, yo, man. I wish we could have like a documentary of, like, some. Where's all that videos? We've got, dude.
I've got some good.
There is a shitload of VCR tape videos of that where, like, Hogs was filmed.
We should
get our hands on that, dude. That's some sick memorabilia there. Anyway, now I'm thinking straight after the early Fudge days. So the early Fudge days was now 1999. That's pretty much when Fudge kind of started. Then a tragic accident happened in 2000, in January, the 4th of January 2000. Yeah. Me, my brother, and my mom was involved in a huge car accident where a Lions and Springbok rugby player made a U-turn on the N1.
So obviously, none of us will ever have driver's license.
Yeah.
At that stage, my folks were going to meet at the tunnel. And yes. And we got a call from your dad to say you'd been involved in this accident.
Yeah.
And you, you can tell what happened.
So, yeah, I was just, thanks for filling in that, your side of that, that's great.
So, we were on the way to meet.
Yes, and then we head-on-head collision with a Honda, and we were driving a Bucky. Obviously, we're a bit higher than from the Honda. So we kind of ramped over the bumper of the Honda, and the Bucky rolled. We went through the air, and the Bucky rolled. I was at the back. The canopy got torn loose, and I fell out. I was on the tar, was screaming, didn't know what's happening. I heard this truck coming towards me. I'm like, okay, cool. This, what happened, is now brutal, but now this is going to be more brutal. I'm going to die now. Just heard this truck coming, and then Roy Steele, I'll never forget his name. I'd actually love to look him up and see if the guy's still alive. I still today believe that he rescued my life. He came into he walked into the road and he picked me up, and he had a medical kit in his car, and he bandaged my arm and whatever, because this is a bit gory, but we don't hold anything back on this, so I'm gonna give the detail. The bone was sticking out of my arm, and my one arm was totally broken just underneath my shoulder. And my mom just remember Roy Steele telling her that your son's left arm, his elbow, is really, really badly injured. You gotta get an ambulance, whatever. Yeah, anyway, was the accident of my brother.
Went straight through the windscreen.
Yes, he went straight through the windscreen. He was in a coma for 2 weeks. That we were on our way to have a 2 or 3 day rehearsal.
Before a gig at the Big Tree.
Yes, before a gig at the Big Tree.
And then what happened then, Francois was in the coma, and you guys were in hospital in Worcester.
Mm.
And I remember phoning your mom and saying, no, I'm going to go wake Francois up. And there was loads of messages coming through on 5FM, Barney Simon's show, wishing Fudge well, we've been in this accident. And Francois's progress was being monitored. And I went through and I said, no, I'm going to wake him up. And I still went into his ward. And I was like, dude, if you can hear me, just squeeze my hand. And I kept on, squeeze my hand. And then he squeezed my hand. I was like, fuck, okay, he's there. And then I said to the nurse, I said, move him to the next ward. And I had Rage Against the Machine. I had the first album on my little boombox. And I had some dark glasses for him. And I said, Francois, I want you to meet my friend Budgie. He's driven me through. Yes, and I kept on. I said, dude, can you hear me? Squeeze my hand. And then I played the music and I played the 5FM songs. And eventually he cleared his throat. And he's like, hey, Budgie, I'm Francois.
Wow.
And then he went back to sleep. And then I went back the next day and I could wake him up, but your folks couldn't, the nurses couldn't.
Mm.
And I asked him questions. I said, okay, who's Zach? Who's this? It was crazy. Your best friend, you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm.
I mean, it took him a while to learn to play a Tear in Heaven and to tie his shoelaces. And I don't think he can do a tie still, but anyway. Yeah, it was a crazy... fuck.
Yeah, no, I'm speechless. It's... hectic, man. That's you owed a life there,
No, man. I hope I'm sure he's woken me up out of a couple of comas. But then what happened? I mean, the gig that we were supposed to play, very best friend of mine, Sean van Halden, his band Frantic, I think that was the start of it. We started organizing the Fudge Benefit Festival, and Alec from Sacrifix,
because
I had no idea whether my best mates had medical aid. I didn't know what the story was, but we decided to put on a show, which was initially supposed to be one or two bands, and it just turned into a weekend.
Mm.
3 days. Bands would start on the Friday.
Adam's Apple, Flower 5
in the morning.
Sacrifix
were on. Sarin Gas were actually booked. Yes. They were coming down from Joburg, which is now Seether.
Yeah.
They didn't make it, but the Hogs were there. Neshama.
Yes.
What was that? Adrian was in the band. Adrian, who's now, plays for Mark Hayes and
Infant Seria.
What was his band? They had a super cool new metal band. It was Vitamin X.
The
other O's. There were four.
Blunt played. Yes, dude.
Serious names. That
super racist
Afrikaans crazy dude Shane, remember?
Yes, Shane Defark.
That I even play.
Yes.
Craig V was there. Everyone just pulled together for the sake of rock and roll, and Francois had come out of his coma, and we all could attend, and it was, things were still...
He was actually there. He was enjoying it. I still remember my parents being so scared for him that wanted to mosh and stuff.
Couldn't bump his head.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, I've still got the pin that was in your arm. You know that?
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't you know that?
Yes, mal, dude.
Yeah. So I've got a, I've got two fudge files.
Yes.
Of photos, and I've got the pin that was in your arm. Mal. In my book.
There was two pins in my arm, but I'm assuming you have the one that was sticking out, because that the other one came out under narcotics.
Okay.
But they had to put me under to get the one out of my shoulder, but there was one here on my forearm, but on my, what do you call this? It's your, damn it, triceps, biceps. It was next to my biceps. Yeah. I think you've got that one, yeah.
No, you can't have it back.
Yeah, okay, cool. So that's the fudge benefit. That, I mean, yes, dude, that is ridiculous for pulling that off, organizing a whole band weekend, and you were what, like 18-19 years old?
Yeah, I think it was a good distraction as well at the time. It kind of just helped.
Yeah,
yeah, I was
obviously a bit of a wreck. Yeah, man, fuck, the so. Two I can just imagine what it must feel like, two of your closest buddies, your bandmates, now all of a sudden this whole joy, because we had fun times, man. We had the best of times ever, playing in a band and doing gigs at such a young age, and like moving forward, doing albums, whatever, and now all of a sudden whoosh, just comes to a standstill.
Yeah, but, and I mean, we had no idea what Francois, I mean,
what's gonna happen.
Knew,
yeah,
well, maybe you wouldn't be able to play drum. We knew your arms were in a state, but I mean, you had minor head injuries, I think your mom as well, but Francois, we didn't.
No, I didn't really have it. I had injuries in terms of, I had stitches on my forehead.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
was like
not.
Yeah,
but your butt, we didn't know
what's going to happen.
State, like if you could walk again,
yes,
if you'd be whatever. We didn't really.
But then what happened is 2 months after that, we played fucking that town hall gig with Johan and Leon organizing it. Johan Groenewald and Leon's surname, I actually forgot now. Excuse me, can you remember Wim Leon's surname?
No, I don't even remember Wim Leon.
Serious, but can you remember Wim Johan?
Yeah, I remember him.
Johan Groenewald, he was great. We actually spoke about him in the first episode as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
But the first, speaking about the first episode, gone really, really viral and popular. Like, you got 378 plays on that, dude. Well Jeez. Done, Dynamic Don.
That's crazy, man. I didn't even have to insult anyone for not drinking brandy or announce Cuscom Base to be my dad.
Not Cuscom Base, please, please.
No. Bless has got enough kids, because is probably, he lives here, Gordon's Place. It's probably more likely. And brandy, I mean, some people just don't like brandy.
Yeah.
It doesn't
yeah.
matter who you are, it's your choice.
But now, also thinking back to those days, the Hogs played Stargazer Cinema a few times. And now you had quite a special friendship with George Bacon, the lead singer, the late lead singer of Hoggery Hog. Can you brief us more about where did that relationship start? And like,
well, I think Fudge had a relationship with the Hogs even before that. I mean, before we played live, there was a festival called the Three Passes
yes.
Festival.
We were going to play.
And the Hogs, I mean, they were passed out in their accommodation and they offered to lend us their gear to play on the Sunday as
yeah,
a school band. We
I
weren't
remember that.
Announced, but
yeah.
George was in the mix, and he, like, George, he would always support like upcoming bands. Like, that was a big thing for George. And I think our friendship got really close when I sang the John and Philip song unannounced at one of the Randfests. And I was backstage and I just ran and I grabbed Lee Lips's mic.
Is
and
that
just,
the oh?
That's the one.
Yeah.
And then I did it again and we played a festival with them and they asked why I hadn't done it.
Yeah.
So it just became a thing. I'd always do the John and Philip song and
yeah.
I actually did it at
The tribute.
Where, at the tribute.
Yeah.
And I think that was the first time I was asked to do it. The other times I would just run on stage and own it. But yeah, George
yeah.
and I used to. We did some wine tasting together. We partied a lot. We went sailing. And I'm actually very good friends with Jonty, George's brother.
His brother,
we
yeah.
still hang out a lot. And I mean, the Hogs, they just always, I mean, make me
Legends,
feel really
man.
Patriotic. But yeah, George and I were good. I mean, we did a lot of the punk versus metal gigs, Mind Assault with the Hogs.
Actually got a bit of a question on that, like a more of a, this podcast is for me is one of the main things about why I'm doing this is to plow some information and knowledge back into the community to let, if I hope there's younger people listening to that and getting tips of, like, I know a lot of the time it seems like we're just talking shit, but one of the things I really want to do is have a very insightful, at least one insightful question in each episode. And if you don't mind, I want to ask you something about your Halloween gigs that you organize. But if you want to continue, because I interrupted you kind of there, do you want to continue a bit more on the hogs, or you're done with those, with that chapter?
No, it's cool. Carry on.
Cool. So I was wondering, you did a lot of the Halloween gigs at Nameless. What was it called? They changed. Yeah.
I mean, I think as mine, well, just we're talking about up in, like, we've always, I think, as Mind Assault, being sort of the elders, part of our plan, or I suppose what we did, we would always help a new band. And I can say with pride that bands such as Moments of Clarity, Strident, Infanteria, bands like these played their first shows with
us. You guys, yeah.
And yeah, we would always choose, and I think the Halloween, I mean, what did you want to ask about the Halloween? Just
No. What I wanted to ask is, like, if you had to give, because you organized fat shows there. I mean, there was plenty people through the door. You had competitions. You did a whole jaw. Like, I'm super proud of the shows you organized there. And I played a couple of them with Jakubane, with actually
Drum and Bass Trio,
with the Gambles even played. But you didn't organize that one. You just kind of pulled in there. And the Gambles had a great fucking gig there. And my point I'm trying to make is all the gigs I played there, even Chris Ross played one of those shows with Crimson House. And you always, like, pulled me in with my projects, which I were involved with at the time. Anyway, so those shows were very successful. Mm-hmm. My question is, how did you do that? Do you have any tips for, and I know this is a cuck question, but if you can just elaborate a bit on, like, how do you go about in booking that shows? Because what I want to get across is that people need to book their own shows. Bowl the scene, book your own shows. I had a band on here on this podcast, the Tasers. They're from Gauteng, a great, great fucking rock band from Joburg. They are getting that. They organize all their own shows. They don't have a booking agent, and they're really doing well. They're really, really doing well for themselves. And why? Because they bowled their own scene. They've got that 70s shows. They've got, like, a kind of a theme behind shows they do, and they really go for it and just organize and play with Shadow Club, play with bigger bands, get people on board, you know? So if you just had to brief a younger dude that's listening to this and wanting to get into this vibe, like, what tips would you give?
I think when planning a show, you've got to understand who's likely to come by default, and how are you going to get people there that aren't going to come conventionally. So, you know, if the Halloween show had been for death metal bands, we wouldn't have done as well. But you've got to think, okay, let's take the Mind Assault have got a great following, or Megalodon, or whoever it is. Let's take a headliner from that genre and pull those guys. And then if you think of logistics, you know, if you want to pull people from the southern suburbs, get an indie band from the southern suburbs or the biggest band, you know, from that area. So think of location, think of genre, think of how you want the night to flow, because people can't listen to drum and bass all night, or death metal, or punk. You know, you gotta cross genre and keep it entertaining. And my focus with the Halloween shows has always been great sound, great lighting, a varied genre, and something a little novel. So I've brought in the burlesque girls, I've had great prizes, and the idea is, sometimes people think they pull a show off and it works amazing, so they try and do it next weekend at the same place, and then the following weekend. So space it out. I mean, Mind Assault, we had a theory called one venue once. So we would only play the same venue once a year. That's it. Because more than that, the same people, I mean, the scene is, well, you can grow it for sure and try and expand, but
you got to create scarcity.
So, yeah, and a demand. So you got to have, people have got to want to see you, and if they know they're not going to catch you then. And the other thing is, put some effort in. You know, I think nowadays people rely on, like, I'm going to stick a Facebook event page up, invite a couple of friends, share it a few times, and off we go. It doesn't work.
I miss the times of posters and flyers. Like, posters, there was flyers. Much more mystic and magical and whatever. There was much more of a vibe. Like, fuck, I got this by chance. I got this flyer. Like, you know how my friend Jacques Leroux from Chris Ross and Dragoon's bassist, he met me, always tell the story, he made a good friendship out of a flyer, because he was chilling in art class in his first or second year. He's a bit younger than me, chilling in art class, and he got this tunes flyer. So he's like, oh, we've got a band, we need to practice in a rehearsal space, let's go to tunes. And then slowly but surely he started knowing me and started building up a friendship, and here all of a sudden he plays with me in a band. And we became really good mates. And he'd always drawn, like, take that back to that flyer. Because the flyer is what made that friendship, you know? So there's this mystique behind, like, having this flyer.
It's also a reminder. You know? It's something tangible. Yeah. It's something to hold
on
to.
Now you've got to go to a timeline on Facebook. Oh, we played that show. It's not so exciting, man. It's like, you know? Anyway. We can get nostalgic about that another time. I'm thinking about band people now. We spoke about the late George Bacon. I want to speak about somebody that's still alive and kicking, and somebody that's doing really well. And we've mentioned him on the first episode as well, Rian Smit. But we didn't really touch your relationship with him. Like, how did you met him, and What happened? Like, tell me a bit more.
Well, Rian was in a band called Azrael.
He
used to play with Mind Assault. We always had this thing about the four. It was Azrael, Mind Assault, Dayton's Knights.
Did you have like your own big four?
Yeah, that was the big four. The War Insane, Azrael, Mind Assault, and Dayton's
Knights. Old Wallace.
Yeah, so if you could book those... Yeah, anyway. So, Rian was a guitarist, and super... At that stage, quite a shy dude, but we connected on certain levels, because of certain things, I suppose. But, we became good mates, and then he said to me, like, he's got this solo thing that he wants to do.
Around... When was this now?
Sheesh. I don't know. I'm cuck with dates.
Like, is it...
2009. Something like that. 2008,
2009. Yeah.
And he wanted to do, he had a few of these solo songs, and he wanted some bass. So we would jam, and he had a good friend of ours, Alan, Ginger Alan, lived just opposite Rafiki's in town. So I'd go stay over there in the week, and we'd jam, and Rian had the song called City by the Sea. So he wanted to have some bass on it, and he'd recorded, Marius from Azrael played drums, Rian had the guitar, and then I learned the song and changed it completely in the recording session. And I wasn't supposed to slap it, I started slapping it. Anyway, we stuck the song together, it became like the World Cup song on Radio Heidelberg. That was in 2010. And then we played a gig together, we strung a whole lot of covers together, we brought in... Sean Olsen from Ill System, and we played at the Gordons Bay Yacht Club. So we had like a couple of parties like that. Yeah, and then Rian and I we just became friends through music.
But if you don't mind me asking, you can obviously just say no if you don't want to go into the stories. But what happened that one story when his laptop got stolen? Come on, man, you gotta.
What happened that one time his laptop got stolen? What is an insurance company listening? So Rian and I don't know. It was a long day. And we went to an art exhibition, like you do, all civil, and there was free booze and free everything else. We had a driver, and the driver knocked off at a reasonable hour. I don't know if it was 11 or midnight, but we decided to go out to Nameless. In my car, Rian convinced me that he could drive. And I had a nap in the car on the way home. I passed out.
I had a nap.
After a burger, I'm sure. And Rian saw a lady that needed a lift home and decided to pick her up. So I woke up with someone's hand in my pocket. It's amazing how you wake up when someone touches your nuts. Someone's close to my balls, I better wake up.
Yeah.
No. Someone grabbed my wallet and I looked to my right and Rian... He's like, dude, you woke up. So I said, oh, fuck, what happened? So I said, my wallet's gone. And the door closed, and I just saw this woman leave the car, and Ryan's like, oh, fuck, my laptop's gone. And we were like two sitting ducks there. Yes. And then I said, well, phone the cops. So we phoned the cops. So I was like, no, we just got robbed. Where are you? And we told them. And Rian thought I lived in Gordon's Bay, not Somerset West. So we were, I don't know why, but anyway, off we were to Gordon's Bay. And Rian turns around, he's like, she got my iMac, but she left the weed. So I'm like, oh, fuck. But what he did say, yeah, anyway, the cops are like, so there's two of you. Yeah, the two of us. Did she have a knife? No. So I thought, we kind of realized halfway through that we were just useless and we gave up on the whole thing. Yeah. But anyway, we got robbed.
But did he also pass out?
No, he was awake.
So you passed out, but he was awake?
Yeah, he didn't know where I lived. And while he went to a petrol station or something to wait for me to wake up to give him directions.
Yeah.
And in that time, offered some lady a ride home.
Yes, but how did the girl get out of the car, get his laptop with him being awake?
No, I don't know. Ask Rian. He can tell that part.
That's ridiculous.
When I say awake, I don't think it was.
I
don't think it was so bright and perky.
Obviously not totally worth it.
But yo, we've had a lot of good time. I mean, Rian, he does a getaway show at Lawrenceford, and he comes to stay at my place for a few days. And it's in March, that's when it happens. And
yeah.
I come into this very room we're sitting in, and he had left, and I thought, fucking hell, the room's warm, man. And I had underfloor heating that I've never learned. And this oak had it on for 4 days straight. He thought it was a dimmer switch. My electricity bill went up a couple
of... Oh, my word. And so, you didn't even know you've got underfloor heating?
No, I knew, but I was too scared to use it. Rian used it for me.
Oh, my word.
And she owes me for that one. Well, they played a great show on New Year's Eve, by the way. Fuck.
Yo, did you watch that?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Awesome. I was his plus one.
Lacker, man. We're at Kirstenbosch.
Mm.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Jeremy Loops and Crimson Arts. I forgot to
ask you, what are you doing for Old Year's Eve? But yeah, let's speak about that now. There was a moment in 2008 where Minesold was supposed to open for Devil Driver. What happened there? Did we actually talk about this in the first episode?
There were some kids that were going to bring Devil Driver down and they didn't have enough money or they enough organizer. It was like it was silly. Yeah, so they didn't come, but yeah.
There was not like a big story behind it. It was just silly.
So some kids that were promoted, they were like self-proclaimed promo company and just flopped. But Witch Doctor brought them later.
I know about that. But I was just, when I was compiling a list of things that we need to discuss, I just remember that there was like
we were also supposed to open for At The Gates.
Yeah?
Not At The Gates. Was it At The Gates?
The Haunted?
At The Gates. No, it was At The Gates. And okay, they also anyway. Didn't come and, yeah, there have been a few of those, but...
Were you guys ever involved in the Soulfly Sepultura? Was there a vibe of you guys playing that show?
No.
Because I know back in the day, Toyland, I went to the Soulfly show. You were obviously also there, the one in Dockside.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I still remember me and Teche driving through. My mom told me that if I get 70% for this, what was it? Physiologie. How do you say that in English?
Physiology.
Physiology, yeah, there you go. If I get 70% for the test the next day, she'll pay my ticket. So I got 69. She's like a good mom.
69 is a good number.
She was like, okay, that's good enough. You can have the ticket. Because she obviously didn't really want me to go because I had the test the next day. But she obviously also wanted me to have the experience.
Yeah,
that's why she caught like the vibe of, yeah, if you're gonna, then you can do it. But anyway.
Good mom.
Yeah, definitely. But anyway, so there was a vibe where like Toyland opened for Soulfly and you actually had to pay to play that show.
Yeah.
You know anything about that? Because that cost them like something like 10 or 12 grand to do that.
Yeah. I think it was like, I mean, you get some promoters that they're bringing out a band with a big following, and for you to get exposure to that fan base, you have to pay to be on the bill. And I think Toyland was subjected to that back in the day. I'm not sure, but that was a thing.
But that's actually ridiculous if you think about it, because that's one gig, dude. You're not going to get like 100 diehard fans.
No, there's a lot of it often works like that, eh? You have to buy your way onto a bill.
No, I understand that, but if you think about it, and I'm not tuning Wallace or Toyland or anybody from that band, if I'm just thinking of that in general, if you think about that, it's totally ridiculous to pay 10 grand to open for Soulfly or Sepultura, because yeah, okay, cool, a lot of people's gonna see you, but fuck, man, you can do that without opening for, you know what I mean?
No,
like,
no, I'm sure.
You don't need that. Seriously?
No, we've never done that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't think that's necessary. Anyway, well, let's move away from that kind of vibes. But yeah, so another thing that I haven't touched on is a bit of your personal life. What do you do for a living?
I sell into the printing industry, so I sell UV flatbed printers that print signage, so printing onto glass and wood, acrylic. Yeah, I sell nationally, so up Joburg, Durban, Cape Town for signage and fine arts, point of sale. Oh, so printing.
And is that what you've done your whole life, or were you previously involved in other...
I've always been in printing, but some litho printing, so magazines, but always from the supply side. So I've sold the hardware, software for imaging.
Okay.
Equipment, so yeah.
Okay, and if I quickly can kind of come to an end, unless you still want to disclose some awesome stories, but I want to talk a bit of gear. What do you play?
What am I currently playing, or what am I going to be playing soon?
Yeah, I know we had the conversation about the P-Bass.
So yeah, Laney amplification. Mm-hmm. Mind Assault's endorsed by Laney. I've got a 4x12 cabinet with a 400 watt head.
Sure.
I've also got a Marshall B65 for practice. I've got a small little Fender bass amp. So I've got
That's the fudge one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of amps in my...
And then you're playing a
and
Jackson.
And I've got a Jackson 4-string, and I've got an Ibanez Ergodyne 5-string.
Okay.
But
which one you mostly use with Minusol?
The Ibanez. Yeah.
The 5-string.
The 5-string.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Because you need that B.
Yeah, it's actually weird. I've only started playing that 5-string like a 5-string now. In Like Water, we have tuned it standard with a B.
Yes.
But in Mind Assault, we had like a crazy tuning. Instead of dropping between C sharp and drop D, I actually tuned the B up.
Okay.
So it was quite a weird tuning, but
The B was higher.
Yeah. Yeah, the B was actually
That's
higher.
That's fucking whack.
I know.
Jeez.
We did it for a little while, thinking it's a good idea, and then it just stuck, and it was quite a crazy tune.
That's really whack, because if I think of a B, I love the B of a 5-string, because it's so... it's like really low, and if you get like that groove thump bottom end going, so yeah, that's super weird.
That is weird.
Know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry.
And then I'm looking at a Fender Precision bass now, just for
like for clay, the more rocky big stuff, because you've got a very much rock and roll guitarist, old Clayton.
Yeah.
From like.
And he's a big Fender fan, so.
Yeah.
He's yeah, and I'm loving it. I'm just like Rosewood, Maple, Deluxe, Mexican, American, what color? There's so many choices. But yeah, I love my Ibanez. The Laney's cool. I'm playing with a couple of effects now, which I never used to.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I've got
I've got a few pedals.
I've got a fuzz pedal.
Lekker.
So
did you buy it in now, or do you always?
I actually bought it with Mindassault, but didn't use it.
Okay.
And now I've just brought it out the cupboard, and it's great. Yeah.
Cool. Also, in the first episode, we were touching on it but moved away from it. Your Wikipedia page, not your, but Mindassault's Wikipedia page, says that you are the first local South African metal band that sings in your native tongue, if you can call it sing. I don't know what you want to call it, scream,
of course
sing,
it's singing,
whatever. Yeah, man, I'm joking. Of course it is singing. So, Francois Blom from the band Kobus, he had Voice of Destruction, which were going in the early 90s. And my thing is now, I want to know, like, what did he have to say? Does he actually know about you guys having on your Wikipedia page the first metal band to sing in your native tongue? Because actually, he was the first metal band to sing in his native tongue.
He had one song.
I don't know.
Wikipedia says Francois might be unhappy. Ask him to give us a call. No, they had one song. Well, one line, really. Okay. But I don't know. Who does Wikipedia? Did we do that?
Who does Wikipedia? I don't know.
Who facilitates
it? You'll have to ask the world.
Isn't that WikiLinks, that little rat guy?
Yes, man. Fuck. That's ridiculous.
No,
okay,
I don't know what happened.
So Voice of Destruction didn't actually, because that's what I'm getting to. So they, what about like that album, Die Slag van Bloedrivier? Wasn't that like, I don't think they only had one song.
They didn't only have Your Master.
Yeah, you can say that, Your Master Poos. You can say
I didn't say that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we're trying to make any statements about being the first of whatever. I know we were the first to release a DVD, and we are still the coolest. but as for that, I don't really know.
Because
that's more the encyclopedia kind of guy.
Okay, now because I'm just trying to get to the surface of it. Because yeah, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's we can leave it there. But I'm without knowledge. I don't know. That's why I'm.
No,
they
were definitely before us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, but I just thought maybe they had more songs, but if they only had one song,
no,
then for
I
sure.
Actually don't know either.
Let's leave that to the listeners to maybe.
You guys can find out, and you win a free Mindassault CD
if you
can tell us the truth.
You heard it.
The first one, whichever CD one.
Daar het jy nou gehoor, uit die paard se bek, net soos wat hierdie interview was. Bevolk Donovan Toone.
Ek sal hom aflewe self.
Lekker.
We gonna drink whiskey.
Yeah. Great vibe. Shot, bro.
Cool, thanks, dude.
Mal gesprek met Donovan Toews, waar ons op 'n paar emosionele reise gegaan het met mense wat al oorlede is, mense soos George Bacon, wat 'n groot rol in Donovan se lewe gespeel het, 'n spesiale vriendskap wat hy en George gehad het, en ook mense soos skoolonderwyseres Marianne Steil, wat ook 'n baie goeie vriend van Donovan was en 'n beduidenswaardige rol in sy lewe gespeel het. En selfs gepraat oor mense wat wakker gemaak is uit komas uit. Ek meen, wat 'n klompie emosionele reise en wat ons geleer het hier van Donovan en veral met die organise van die Fudge Benefit Festival, is dat hy se ou wat insit in endeavors, in goeders in en later kyk wat daar uitkom. Hy's 'n go-getter, ou wat dinge doen, hier iets gebeur en hier moet nou iets gedoen word om dit reg te maak, en hy sal net sonder om te skroom, sal hy net leisels vat en sê kom ons doen dinge, kom ons kyk wat kan ons hier regmaak, wat kan ons herstel wat hier verkeerd gegaan het. En hy het ook 'n ongelooflike hoeveelheid plek in sy lewe, in sy hart vir mense. Hy kan nie, ek wil amper so ver gaan as om te sê, hy kan nie sonder mense funksioneer nie. Hy is 'n ou wat moet mense, dinge vir mense doen en mense rondom hom hê, wat ek dink 'n wonderlike kwaliteit is. En so wens ons vir Donovan sterkte toe op sy nuwe reis met sy nuwe band. En dan ook sterkte met die Mindsalt album wat julle gehoor het, wat nou heavy in progress is, waar daar is al mixes wat teruggekom het en die dinge klink lekker. Ek het so sneak preview of 2 of 3 geluister en dinge klink goed. Julle kan verseker uitsien na 'n magtige en 'n kragtige nuwe Mindsalt album, wat vir hulle ook weer 'n bietjie nuwe woema as 'n band sal gee. En hopelik sal ons nou nie weer so lank wag soos wat ons nou het om hulle weer op 'n paar stages te sien nie. Verder wil ek net soos gewoonlik vir julle noem, as julle feedback het, as julle dinge het wat julle dink ek moet doen, gaste wat ek moet inkry, stuur vir my e-pos na info@tunesstudio.co.za. Hy vorm 'n dubbel S in die middel, tunesstudio.co.za. Stuur gerus feedback soen toe, of gooi net feedback op Tune Studio se Facebookblad, of stuur vir my private messages op, of whatever messages, mails, wat ook al julle verkies. Laat weet my wat julle wil hoor hierdie jaar op hierdie program, dan kan ek kyk of ek dalk iets kan doen daaraan. Anyway, julle moet lekker week hê en vat die nuwe jaar by die pakkie bil by die horings, vat die leisels, neem beheer en gaan voort en gaan maak memories. Cheers julle, lekker wees.